Even as terrorism is condemned by governments around the world and massive efforts made to identify and punish those who practice it, the threat continues to spread and new terrorists are recruited every day. Christopher Harmon is the co-author of The Terrorist Argument, Modern Advocacy and Propaganda, and a book that explores the way terror groups use communications media, both old and new, to recruit. He's with us in our studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Chris.
We were talking about terrorism and its origins before the show, and you offered what I thought was a very good working definition of terrorism.
There is a good one that we use as a basis for the book. It's from a think tank in the 1970s, and it's that terrorism is the deliberate and systematic murder, maiming, and menacing of the innocent to inspire fear for political ends, which nicely distinguishes it from things like guerrilla warfare, mm-hmm. which can be quite legal and is the basis of some legitimate revolutions. Mm-hmm. Guerrilla warfare being attacks on security forces and authorized armed forces.
The American Revolution being one of many examples, right?
There are quite a few rebellions around the world which we would think of as to be completely legitimate. What distinguishes the terrorists is really that choice, and I've found many cases where we can show they're making a strategic choice to attack the innocent for the shock value it lends to the fight. It broadens the conflict and it gets them more attention. And among the very first students of this are part of the book of one of the early chapters, the FLN insurgents against the French in Algeria. Mm-hmm. They'd been engaging in guerrilla warfare, and it wasn't getting them very far. Mm-hmm. And in a major conference in 1956, they made a strategic decision to go to terrorism, and it worked.
You see that in Gilles Pontecorvo's great film, The Battle of Algiers.
That is one of the most instructive films ever made on this kind of business. And by the way, modern terrorists after that frequently watched that.
I know.
They watched State of Siege by Costa Gravis, and mm-hmm. they watched The Battle of Algiers by Pontecorvo because it's so instructive tactically.
Those tactics are seemingly increasingly popular in spite of a huge effort to kill this monster. It's spreading.
I'm afraid that since about maybe the Algerian case or maybe in terms of international air piracy, 1968, from that era onward, we've seen this tactic and strategy used a lot. And there are enough people who've seen it work or made it work mm-hmm. or enough who believe it could work so that I'm afraid it's here to stay. It's now an established feature of international relations, and we have to oppose it wherever we can because it makes a wreck of things like the civil society and rule of law and reasonable politics. But I think you're right. The basis of your question is right. It's effective enough so that it continues to be a tool of a lot of violent groups.
What kept it at bay? You know, I'm thinking now of past centuries in which it was unthinkable. What kept it at bay during those years?
Well, many of the eras had their own campaigns. The most important one is the anarchists in our century, the late 19th century, mm-hmm. early 20th. For a generation, international anarchists were very important. And by the way, in terms of the book, The Terrorist Argument, we track the publications they produced. They mm-hmm. they were prolific in writing pamphlets and producing newspapers and giving orations. And they moved internationally, not unlike the way some of the Salafists do. They were multilingual. They were adept in lots of ways and comfortable as international figures on the world stage. Peter Kropotkin's among those who wrote memoirs. So we discovered a lot of modern terrorists who've done books. Well, that movement was attacked in the kind of way that governments would respond to provocations after all those years. Governments had international conferences to coordinate policing. Mm-hmm. They created some new policing agencies. That's one of the sources of our FBI. In fact, we hadn't anything like that prior to the 1910s. And they began doing scrutiny of things like visas and consular permissions and mm-hmm. such, and getting quite careful about tracking the movement of these international figures abroad. So the anarchists at that time were atheists, most of them. And they've favored no government, not a new caliphate. But surprisingly, there's some comparisons to the modern-day terrorists. And both those guys at the end of the 19th and the fellows we deal with in the early 21st were remarkably similar in terms of how they thought about propaganda, how smart they were, and how vocal they were.
These are often highly educated people who should know better by most, you know, contemporary standards, right?
Very much so. The when you look at a magazine like Inspire by Al-Qaeda or Dabiq by ISIS, you're looking at a very sophisticated terrorism tool. They have some of them have done books like Musab al-Suri's important book on the call to global Islamic resistance, which lays out the strategy for these approaches. If you look at the communist side, you find the same thing, Chris. People like Abimael Guzman in Peru, an important Maoist, he held two doctoral degrees.
The thing that's amazing to most civilized people is the degree to which, as you said at the beginning of our discussion, this is the murder of the innocent. This is not killing, you know, uniformed combatants who know, you know, theoretically knew what they were getting into. This is women and children. This is people in a market square. This is people in the World Trade Center. This is just, you know, people who didn't think they had any part in the combat. Do you have to sort of, is it necessary for these people initiating these actions to, in effect, deny the humanity of those they're killing?
Yes, it is. And some of the terror groups have been honest enough to have internal debates about this. The Weathermen, for example, a Marxist-Leninist group in this country, you would remember, went through quite a debate after a major bombing back east. And they gathered in California for a kind of Western summit. And many of them made it clear that they did not believe in the kinds of tactics they just engaged in, which killed a lot of people. And other groups have shown similar kinds of qualms, and sometimes that's how we get defections. And by the way, in terms of publicity, that's one of the best things governments can use is when someone does defect from these groups, they know the inside, and they're willing to talk about that. So, for example, Sean O'Callaghan's book called The Informer is a terrific book to understand how the Irish Republican Army and Sinn Féin worked. And he was also very damaging once he defected in speaking out against terrorism because he was among those who had the moral qualms you asked about.
Is that the source of the John Ford movie, The Informer?
I don't know.
It's about an Irish terrorist.
There are several very good movies about Irish terrorism and guerrilla warfare, including The Wind in the Barley and several others in modern days. What I did was spend 10 years reading one of the newspapers that was supportive of the movement. It was published in New York City called The Irish People, and that's the basis for a chapter in the book because I could glean a great deal about what they thought and how they justified violence.
Well, thanks very much for speaking with us, and we do want to emphasize you're speaking for yourself and not in any...
I'm an independent scholar. Chris, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
My pleasure. Christopher Carman is the co-author of The Terrorist Argument, Modern Advocacy and Propaganda. You can learn more about him and his work on our Facebook page, The Conversation.